This podcast is brought to you compliments of Kaspersky Lab, protecting more than 300 million systems worldwide against internet threats.
Welcome to the Digital Underground Podcast. I've got my old friend Rich Mogul on the podcast today. It's been a long time, I think, Rich, since I've had you on. It's good to talk to you again. And I think there's plenty to be said. A lot has been written. We're going to talk about the Target data breach today and kind of the implications of it, and as well as, you know, I guess the Neiman Marcus and some other retailers we might find out very soon. Who knows, while we're recording this podcast, Krebs might have something up. You never know. So let's just sort of start from the beginning with this. When I first saw the, you know, the Target data breach, I was like, okay, you know, 40 million, it's kind of, you know, that's a huge number, but it looks like kind of run of the mill. Like, my first guess was they probably hit a payment processor, because that's a huge number, and it would be difficult to get, you know, that kind of number with getting malware on somebody's network. But it turned out that's exactly what they did, is get malware on all the POS devices, which is kind of insane.
Yeah, I mean, I originally thought, I didn't think the payment processor, but I thought they got one of the you know, the back end servers. Like, so many stores were affected. I'm like, well, it's probably not back of house. You know, because I mean, there's like four components to any payment system. You've got the terminal you swipe. You've got the computer, the register that's attached to, which is basically the computer. Yep. That connects usually to the back of the house, and then the back of the house connects up to the corporate servers. And I just assumed they got back into the back end corporate servers, and it looks like, well, yeah, they did, as well as anything and everything else within Target.
Yeah, which, you know, obviously sort of leads to the assumption that these guys were on the network for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, we can't fully assume that, because some of these things, they actually hit pretty quick. So if you look at the RBS WorldPay hack, mm-hmm. they got into that one, and they kind of really owned them all, you know, deeply within, I think it was just a couple of weeks, and mostly within a couple of days was when the bulk of the work was done and the planning for the crime. So, I mean, we can't – that's an assumption I don't want to make. But, you know, with all the rumors we hear about Target, and, you know, I've heard they've had some, you know, dysfunctional IT issues and relying a lot on – anyway, you know, all rumor stuff, no, you know. And I don't like to talk about rumors, but yeah.
But so it's interesting to me that – I mean, obviously the POS system would be a prime sort of juicy target for attackers. If, you know, you never know if that's what their goal was, if they just happened to, you know, get onto the Target network somehow and then discover that, you know, they, you know, over the course of a week or two had access, they could get access to these POS machines. It's kind of amazing to me that these things still, you know, the POS machines are accessible and run on the same networks, and, you know, someone on the network has the ability to load malware onto it. I know it's probably difficult to kind of segment all that stuff, but it seems like there should be a way to do better at that at this point.
Well, there is a way to do better. You know, but again, we can't assume we know exactly what happened within Target. And how that got there. So, you know, I mean, more and more will you know, obviously come out over time, or hopefully they'll release, you know, what they can. There's often limits because of law enforcement, or just because they're corporate idiots and think that they shouldn't talk about these things when they should. But you know, we do see a lot of these networks. It's not compartmentalized well, or if it is, the you know, all you have to do is get kind of in one little area of that, then the whole thing blows open. You know, in large part, just it's VPN access to a VLAN or something along those lines. They're not fully compartmentalized. But, I mean, a lot of this is because they're running, you know, really outdated stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, come on, man. Wait, how many restaurants or retail organizations do you walk into and see the Windows XP screensaver?
Right. Yes, I enjoy that.
And these are new. Like, there's a you know, my favorite breakfast spot near me. I mean, it's Windows XP, you know, registers. You walk in, it's got, I mean, the XP logo is the screensaver. Mm-hmm. The New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve also, we ended up at the Children's Health Clinic here in Phoenix because my son got ear infections.
Of course.
Of course. You know, what else are you going to do on New Year's Eve when you have three kids?
Happy holidays, Dad.
Five and under. Yeah. Clearly, you're not going to drink or leave the house. You are going to cry. Just
everyone
curled up in a ball in the corner. Just, right. You know, in case listeners were wondering. But yeah, we walked in there and I see all Windows XP stuff. That facility has been open for like, you know, less than 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no excuse. I mean, that is a corporate IT with sensitive healthcare information running Windows XP for all their systems, for their clinical systems.
Which, I mean, I don't know a ton about those kind of, you know, specialized systems. You know, I've seen those in hospital rooms as well, you know, like the monitors and that kind of stuff. They're all running XP. I imagine it's difficult to upgrade them and that kind of thing. But if you're buying brand new equipment, shouldn't there be some version that runs on something other than XP?
It's bad. And I think we've talked about, I have a family member I'm not allowed to talk about who works in healthcare IT. It's not always that bad. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, healthcare organizations that are on more recent stuff. Not many. But typically it's budget. A lot of those apps that they're running, I know this was the EMR, so the medical records stuff. It wasn't even a, you know, the EKGs or anything. There's no reason that those can't run on Windows 7.
No, you wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. So just, you know, going back to these retail breaches in general, it's been – you know, what, 10 years or so since we've been seeing these kind of, you know, breaches. We were, me and Mike were talking the other day about the Target breach, and we were going back to the ChoicePoint thing,
yep.
You know, which wasn't really a retail breach, you know, it was a totally different animal, but some of the other ones that followed on quickly to that. And, you know, we're still seeing a lot of the same problems that we saw, you know, a decade ago. And obviously that's not just in retail. I think guys in corporate networks are kind of fighting that battle as well. But when you're talking about a company like, you know, Target, and, you know, if you add up the credit and debit card numbers that were stolen, 40 million, and the 70 million that had personal information stolen, you know, that's a third of the U.S. population roughly that was affected by this breach in one way or another. You know, I just feel like things don't seem to be progressing in the way that they should. We don't seem to be getting better at much of this stuff.
No, and you know, look, it is. It's a really long bell curve. I mean, the technique used here looks like it was likely very similar to, you know, techniques used by the Albert Gonzalez stuff, which was, you know, some of that started in 2004 through what, about 2009. And, you know, that's enough time. But by the same token, a lot of the attacks that he used, even in 2009, went back to 2003. And it was using, you know, Common SQL injection that up until about, you know, I think 3 years ago, the FBI was still warning people about using XP command shell on Windows SQL Server. So it takes forever. And you know, because it's easy for us as kind of pundits, as, you know, talking heads, because God knows we don't work for a living anymore.
No.
Although I don't know why I would get more sleep, I would think, when I'm not working anymore. But, you know, we forget that it's just – there's so many layers of management, and there's so much legacy and budget issues. It's really hard to drag these guys forward. And I don't know. I'm not making an excuse, because to me it's unacceptable in this day and age. Like, there's no question that the risk to your organization, if you're in retail and some of these other industries and you're running some of these systems configured the way that many of these are, that you are facing a material risk that will get you in trouble with your shareholders. I mean, there's just no question anymore. The problem is they still just don't get it. I think some of the consultants going into those organizations aren't telling them the truth, or if they hear the truth, they don't want to hear it.
Yeah. And well, how much of that is, do you think, due to the fact that even when we've seen some of these massive breaches in the past, they haven't had a huge effect on the companies, at least long term, you know, financially? Like, you know, people always made a big deal out of the TJX, and, you know, their stock price went up, you know, if you, depending on how you want to mess with the numbers, you know, a year or two after the breach. You know, there doesn't seem to be a huge financial effect on a lot of these. I think there's been some, but in general, it doesn't seem like, you know, the shareholders hold these companies accountable for this.
Well, they do and they don't. I mean, partially, you know, there are the direct – so that we tend to look at share prices. If you think about it, though, some of these organizations lose, you know, tens to hundreds of millions of dollars as a result of these incidents.
Right.
And then they always get sued. So, you know, there are almost always some, you know, additional consequences around that, the legal costs and everything else. And there's the direct response cost. And then there's the banks are going to sue them because of all the reissuing of cards and all the – and then they're also responsible for the – you know, in the end, probably responsible for all the fraud associated, you know, with this. So, you know, if we look at kind of all of those pieces together, you know, I do think they suffer. The even though overall profits might rise, you know, that's $100 million or $10 million or whatever it is in between that they don't get to use to advance their business.
That's so true. Yeah.
I mean, that's material. And the question is whether it's enough. And most of the organizations who suffer those losses, we do see make changes.
Yeah, you'll end up seeing some, you know, internal or external changes. And, you know, I think Mike and I were talking about the Sony breach. They didn't even have a CSO at the time of that attack a few years ago, which, you know, that seems like a logical thing that you might want to do is hire a CSO, especially for a company that size. I don't know what the you know, internal structure is at Target or Neiman Marcus or whoever else ends up being, you know, hit. And we have no idea whether these are the same guys or whatever, but it does seem like there's some common factors, you know, spread across a lot of these breaches that we see, you know, just kind of basic mistakes that people are still making that, you know, they should have learned from years ago. You know, and the clients that you guys talk to, Rich, how much are you still having to like kind of hammer home a lot of these basic, you know, things that you might have thought that everybody had absorbed, you know, 10 or 15 years ago?
Well, it depends on who I'm talking with, but yeah, more than you would think. I mean, it is a truly honest answer. You know, in some cases, I'm sort of surprised, but more often than not, the security pros, at least they understand the basics. The parts where they kind of get hung up on is with you know, trying to get the budgets and the approval. So say, hey, you got to get off Windows XP; it's insecurable. Sometimes they get that. Sometimes they don't. But the answer is, well, you know, we've got a 5-year roadmap to get off XP.
No.
That's out of our control. And it to me, you know, some of that comes down to, I mean, to some degree, sometimes they are, you know, I hate to say it, emasculated. I mean, they can't do their jobs based on the politics within the organization. You know, and others, they're not telling people what needs to be said. I'm not going to blame all of them. But, you know, we were talking before, it's bell curve. Not everybody's, you know, great at their job. So some people are really good at it. Some people are very good and in bad positions. And others are, you know, not great and not communicating the risk appropriately. But, I mean, again, I talked to a lot of frustrated security pros, you know, who do, you know, kind of struggle with these issues. And just because they, you know, have difficulties in getting their getting management to kind of buy in.
Yeah, I think that budget thing is kind of not underrated, it's not the right word, but maybe underappreciated part of the problem, especially for probably journalists, people like me that just kind of look at it from the outside and think, well, why don't you just go fix this? You know, you read the vulnerability reports, you know what the problems are, go fix it. And, you know, a lot of times their answer is going to be, I don't have the money. You know, nobody's giving me the budget to do this. I can't just go buy, you know, 500 brand new Windows 7 machines or Windows 8 machines. That's not the way that it works. You know, so we kind of have to do what we can and, you know, go down a list of priorities, see what we can hit, and then, you know, go from there.
Yeah, exactly. And again, you know, without knowing the details of what happened with Target, we don't know if there was a, you know, irresponsibility. I mean, that's just, you know, there's just no way to know for sure when you're the outsiders. However, you know, it sounds like they were owned pretty deeply on multiple levels, and that does indicate to me that, you know, the bad guys, maybe they were super smart, but or maybe, you know, Target didn't do what they were supposed to, because now we're finding out personal information, you know, beyond just credit card numbers was lost. And, you know, as this builds up, as we hear more about the case, you know, we'll be able to get a better picture of it. Not make any assumptions now, but the early indicators are, when you hit something of this scale, more often than not, it's preventable. The question is it's easy to say that in hindsight. So now we need to look back and say, with the information they had at the time, and, you know, did they make the appropriate decision?
Right.
And considering how much money I have given Target alone, it's more than enough to fund their entire information security department and anything they could ever want to do. So, you
You and me both. There. Yeah, I feel like I've bought them a whole fleet of Windows 7 machines just on my own.
But you know, a lot of what this comes down to, and look, that's many millions, you know, of dollars to replace that stuff out. But I think what a lot of this comes down to is that, you know, they have an array of business decisions sitting there in front of them, including security guys probably telling them we're in trouble, but mm-hmm. they pass their PCI assessments or whatever, or they have a roadmap to it. I don't think everybody fully understands just how insanely bad it is out there if you're big enough to be a target.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's in the talks that I've given in the last couple months to like some smaller conferences, some financial groups, people like that. That's the thing that I've tried to, you know, hammer home like every 30 seconds in the presentation is if you're, you know, if you're big enough to be a target of choice, not just a target of opportunity, you're in, you know, it's a really ugly environment for you. You know, there's the chances are you're already owned. And if not, then, you know, it's only a matter of time, which, you know, sounds like sort of just doomsaying, but it's just that's the reality. You know, we just know too many people with these organizations that are like, you know, we've had all these incidents never go, you know, weren't big enough to be reported, or even the ones that are, you know, they're worse than you hear about. Like it's not a pretty picture out there these days.
Yeah, no. No, not at all. I mean, there's you know significant amounts of money to be made here.
Oh yeah,
and you know you have that much money, there's going to be people out there.
I forget who wrote it, but I read a story this morning, a follow up. It was Jeremy Kirk from IDG who wrote a story saying that one of the biggest problems that these attackers have now is they have too much data. They can't sell all of these stolen credit cards.
Yeah,
there's a glut. You know, they did their jobs too well, apparently.
That's just fascinating to me, and you know, and at some point, you know, a lot of this comes down to the credit card system and the, you know, the deep weaknesses that I think we're, you know, we are, but you know, familiar with there, the lack of chip and pin and kind mm-hmm. of being behind the times on a lot of those things. So you know, at some point, hopefully that'll change. Instead of just pushing risk off to people with PCI, and more fundamentally hardening that part of the payment system, they'll move on to something else. But I mean, that's our job, is to make it harder for them.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get better at it.
Yep.
All right. Hopefully. I know you got to run. So thanks for your time, Rich. It's always good to talk to you. And if not before, I'm sure I'll see you at RSA in a few weeks.
Yeah, sounds good. So thanks for having me, and for you and anybody listening, you know, don't forget we've got the disaster recovery breakfast. So
yes, and also go check out the video, I guess, video podcast that you guys are doing, Rich, on the Securosis site.
Yeah, just we're doing a weekly video called the Fire Starter. We launch it on Mondays, and just trying to get people, give people something to talk about during the week. But I mean. That's
really
kind
good.
Of an egotistical way to do it, but otherwise it's just, you know, the three of us having fun and talking about an issue. We keep it short. It's 15 minutes, and hopefully within the next week or so, we'll actually start pushing those out as just an audio podcast as well.
It's great. You can see Mike Rothman like railing against something at, you know, in his office, waving his arms around. It's hilarious. It's excellent. All right, Rich.
Exactly.
Talk to you soon. Thanks, man.
Talk to you later. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Compliments of Kaspersky Lab, a world leader in internet threat protection for small, medium, and large enterprises. Visit Kaspersky.com for more information about their line of premium protection solutions.